The following podcast was produced in Virginia Beach, Virginia by Pungo Publishing Company, LLC.
Hi, this is John Doucette. I'm the editor of the Princess Anne Independent News, a community newspaper in Virginia Beach, Virginia. We generally cover the southern part of the city, including Pungo and our rural communities, as well as Knott's Island, North Carolina. The conversation you'll hear in a moment was recorded in Chesapeake, a neighboring city to ours. I spoke with Chris Gilchrist. She's a licensed clinical social worker, and for nearly three decades, Chris has facilitated the Hampton Roads Survivors of Suicide Support Group, which she founded. 11 years ago, she and members of this group began the local Out of the Darkness community walk. This has brought thousands of people to Mount Trashmore Park in Virginia Beach each September, and in recent years, it's been the largest event of its kind in the United States. Our little newspaper has provided very humble support to the local walk with advertising space, and I've done some photography for a new effort Chris is leading in our community. It will be a new event taking place this coming September, also at Mount Trashmore, and just like Chris's past work, it will bring awareness and healing to those who have lost people who either chose suicide or have fought depression. Chris will discuss this new effort in just a moment. Chris, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We're going to talk a little bit about the new event that is going to happen in September. And this is the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, Help, and Healing. Can you tell me about what this is and why it's happening?
This is a community outreach. Mm-hmm. The focus and mission is all about promoting good mental health, preventing suicide, and we do both by raising awareness of depression as a treatable disease, it's a medical issue, and of suicide as a preventable tragedy. And that's our mission.
Great. And so what, can you tell me a little bit about what this event is and where it's going to take place and who will participate?
Well, with that mission in mind, this is a morning of hope, mm-hmm. Three parts of this. It's raising awareness. It's providing remembrance, helping to heal, and also it's a celebration of life. And Hampton Roads is so responsive to this cause and this mission that it's exciting because we have the interest, the resources, and the fellowship that we can create, organize, form our own local Hampton Roads event, which is the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, Help, and Healing. And again, the hope is to bring awareness to people so that they understand depression is treatable and that suicide is preventable.
Great. Now, in the past, you've been involved with, I believe, the Out of the Darkness Community Walk, but that's no longer the case, right?
That's no longer the case for me because I live in Hampton Roads, and I know that the best way we can serve Hampton Roads civilians and military is to have a focus. Not so much now national. We don't need the national supports for us to come together as a seven-city community toward this mission of raising awareness. So we have all the resources, you know. Hampton Roads has been so responsive to this cause that now we can, with Hampton Roads communities, be able to focus on serving best our Hampton Roads needs. And so when we do that, we'll not have to consider the national needs as much as being able now to focus on Hampton Roads civilian and military needs. And it also means, even though I'm really clear, John, that to participate, you do not have to make a donation. No donations are required for registration or for participation. Yet, any funds or any donations that people would like to make, they can. It will be tax deductible. They can make those donations, and any funds raised go directly to Hampton Roads. So any interest, all of the resources begin and end in Hampton Roads. So we can, again, best serve our civilian and military population. Our community, Hampton Roads, is very unique. Where else do you have all five military branches, the largest naval installation in the world, and Fort Eustis and Langley, our Marines, our Coast Guard, our Navy, all are so present, and we want to be able to support them in Hampton Roads. So military is a big part of who we are. Hampton Roads is a culture that includes civilians, but also very much respects and includes our military.
And in past events that you've been involved in, there's been a very big military participation as well.
Oh, gosh, that's true.
So presumably that's going to continue. So when September rolls around and we're at Mount Trashmore at this event, what do you envision?
I mean, well, in fact, today's very exciting for all of us in Hampton Roads, because the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower, it's now 1 o'clock, John, but I think it was 2 to 3 hours ago, this ship came back into port. One of my patients actually is the wife of an active duty. Mm-hmm. And so this ship, and this is the third year that I've been involved in my outreach to our community, that we've had an aircraft carrier, that Dwight, the mighty Ike, is what the sailors refer to who are stationed, whose command is the mighty Ike. They were part of the event that I was organizing. They, out in the Adriatic, on the upper flight deck, walking in between the F-18 Hornets, they were part of this event, a part of this cause of raising awareness. So I anticipate, you know, I'm so grateful to have, for us, to have the trust and be able to provide resources to our military, and I have every reason to believe that for 2017 we're going to have another aircraft carrier participating.
That's great.
That's pretty awesome and exciting.
Right, and in the past you've had other ships as well, and
started with the USS Bush,
right,
to the Theodore Roosevelt, and then the Mighty Ike this year, and I'm sure we'll have an aircraft carrier next year, as well as having the Army, all five branches involved.
Right, and again, this issue touches a lot of people, but it's a specific concern in the armed forces.
Well, because statistically, the greatest risk is our military, active duty, and even more at risk are our vets, our military vets. So we want to, it's one of the reasons why any place you see the possibility, learning about this event, the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, Help and Healing, you're gonna see in writing, or you're gonna hear from my mouth or somebody's mouth right now, donations are not required to participate. Mm-hmm. We want to make it clear that there's not a fundraising agenda that comes between this event and our military.
So the point is for people, however they participate or however they're comfortable participating, just to be there and to be in the company of other people who understand.
Who understand the mission, to raise awareness, to promote good mental health, to prevent suicide. And also, if this is a nonprofit, we don't, I want to be truthful in saying we applied 4 months ago for the 501c3 nonprofit status, tax deductible, and of course we have an attorney who filled out the application to make sure we know everything to do and have every reason to believe that we're going to have that nonprofit status, but it takes 4 to 6 months to get, so we're not accepting any donations, so we have that, so it's tax deductible for people who want to donate, but you do not have to donate. And especially because we want to make this resource, this outreach, be available for everyone. And our military is our greatest at-risk population. Mm-hmm. So you know, so we, again, I think anybody who may hear this would agree that we want to especially hold in regard our military and let them know no donations required. For those who are able or want to donate, we appreciate that. We appreciate that. And also, we're really pretty excited to know that any funds raised stay here in Hampton Roads. They don't go up to a bigger corporation or national, and that's fine for, you know, those corporations and national, but this event is focused. It begins in Hampton Roads and it ends in Hampton Roads. So any donations do stay in Hampton Roads.
That's great. So I'm speaking with Chris Gilchrist about the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, Help and Healing. The event is scheduled for September 9th, 2017 at Mount Trashmore Park in Virginia Beach. You can call Chris to find out more about participating or sponsoring this event. That number is 757-483-5111. And if you are in crisis, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or 1-800-273-TALK. In a moment, we will come back and talk about how the Hampton Roads Survivors of Suicide Support Group came about.
The new event is the Hampton Roads, that's the focus, the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, Help and Healing. And we have the Help and Healing in there because this event, this morning, is all about being present, this outreach is for anyone who's been touched by depression, the disease of depression, and it's also it's for anyone who's been touched by suicide. So the help is for those touched by depression, and the healing, Help and Healing, the healing is for anyone who's been touched by suicide.
Right. And so I've been to past events that you've organized, and I've just been struck that people come, I mean, from Hampton Roads, with that Hampton Roads connections, but people come from all over, North Carolina, other states, to come back and either support people who've had losses or remember people who've had losses or just deal with their own issues of depression. I mean, what do you see this event that's coming up being as far as that kind of collecting of people in one place? What are your hopes?
Oh, I love that question because we're not having in our title walk, because whenever I've been involved in outreaching to promote good mental health, or when I talk with people who have been involved with my past involvements, if I say, so why did you come back for us? Why did you come back to be a part of this? Or what touched you? No one has ever said, because it's a walk.
Yeah.
It's never been about the walk. The top two things people always will say when they look at the outreach that we're going to have in the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, they're going to say, it's about the message. It's about the talking, the personal testimony, the program. It's about having counselors there and that mission and that support. And the second thing they'll identify is the fellowship. There's a strong sense of fellowship, and people are really moved by the spirit of that sensitivity and that kind of support. So that's why the name, I think, for this event, Hampton Roads, Morning of Hope, Help and Healing, so effectively represents what we hope this outreach to be for civilian and military in Hampton Roads.
So you have been doing the SOS group, Survivors of Suicide. How long have you been doing this group now?
I was thinking to adding this up to make sure I've got it right, but I started it February 1988. So I'm pretty sure in a month that's 29 years, right? And so I have facilitated this group for come February, 29 years.
Well, and so, and let me, I don't want to assume that people know what it is you do, but tell me, what is a licensed clinical social worker, just in layman's terms? What do you do?
Well, let's see. So it means your master's level of social work with a clinical track. Yeah. And then to be licensed means some of the qualifications have eased up over the last years, to be honest. But it means that you've been practicing while under supervision and support so that you refine and develop your skills and your knowledge. And then you pass tests for that. And also it means when you're clinically licensed that you're accountable to a professional board whose goal is to maintain standards.
So what do you do in terms of clients or patients?
I'm a psychotherapist, although LCSWs can work in hospitals and so many different places. But I'm a psychotherapist in private practice. Mm-hmm. So I meet primarily with families, not children younger than five, but I'll meet with families. I'll do marital. I do the majority of my patients are individual, and many of them, as I have a busy schedule, but I always do find room, it's true, for someone if they've lost a loved one to suicide, because that's a very acute and special kind of bereavement. Right. So the majority of my patients are not people who have lost a loved one to suicide, and also that's an area where I think I have quite a bit of experience, and I appreciate the need to have support to have healthy bereavement. I don't know if you know, John, I'm sure the general population does not know, survivors of suicide are five times at greater risk for suicide.
Yeah.
And knowing that is one reason why I was motivated or encouraged to want to provide a support group that might help people heal in healthy ways in their bereavement. And bereavement's a balance of doing the emotional grieving part, but also with the balance of moving on with life. And there's no formula. Everybody's grieving is individual, but I also know and believe and witness that some bereavements healthier than others, and there are some ways to go through bereavement that's going to lead to a healthier outcome, so you're not part of that one out of five survivors who may be at risk for suicide themselves.
But, I mean, there's a difference between your practice, your work, in some ways, and the support group itself. Is that fair?
Oh, there's no relationship. I don't get paid for the support group, and I get paid for seeing patients. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people get my name. Let's see. It goes either way. Sometimes people get my name just through counseling, and a patient may not even know that I do this group. Or sometimes people have lost a loved one, and they might hear about my name because of the group, or they might hear about the group because of me. You know, but there's no business or financial ties or connections.
So you don't have to be a client of yours to be in the support group?
Oh, absolutely. And there's no fee to being in the support group. There never has been.
So that seems like a big thing to talk about, because I wanted to ask about the support group itself. So this has been in place for nearly three decades.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right? You say it that way.
Yeah.
That's more than half a way to half of a century.
It is, but that's just the math of it. But how do people, how do people find out about the support group? What do you do? I mean, it seems so hard. You know, I've had people who've struggled with depression in my life, and we had a loss of a friend a couple years to suicide, and it seems like this is a thing that people struggle with. Where do I even begin? Who do I talk to? It's just one of the many things you have to navigate when you have someone you lose, but how do people get involved in a support group? How do people find help?
Yeah. Fortunately, and I, with this support group, have an informal longitudinal study of how the community learns about a support group and how people come. So and we have a military bias in any sampling of residents here in Hampton Roads. Mm-hmm. So there is a military bias. Yet, with the exception of that, the population, and I don't know if people are interested in this, John, but the population of our support group has always been like a microcosm of national statistics, with the exception of more weight with military. Mm-hmm. And so what I've witnessed is at the beginning, well, also the group's been around for a long time, but at the beginning, people had a hard time knowing about the group, but it's not just that we were new, it's people didn't talk about depression and suicide mm-hmm. as much.
Right.
And so now people are, the number of churches that participated last year doubled, which means in our faith community, there's more of an understanding or acceptance of depression
mm-hmm.
as a medical condition, that even a good Christian can have diabetes, heart disease, or depression.
Right.
So people are finding out more from, it could be their faith community, it could be their funeral.
I'm a Catholic. There are some hard views on suicide.
There are, but you know what? We had this wonderful Catholic priest mm-hmm. say the prayer on stage. That was probably with involvements that I've had many years ago. And when he gave the prayer, I cannot tell you how many Catholics told me that to hear that priest, I almost said the name because he's a beloved priest, but I guess I'm not supposed to.
But we don't need the name. Yeah.
But he gave permission for so many people to at least consider that maybe dying by suicide
mm-hmm.
is not a sin or a crime. You know, what was it? Back to the 8th century, St. Augustine, the 12th century,
right.
Thomas Aquinas. Depression, mental illness, and suicide were considered crimes and sins. You notice we still, by far, anyone listening to this, if I ask them, you listening, how would you refer to somebody's who had taken their own life, who had suicided? I bet everyone listening is going to say, I say they commit suicide. So-and-so committed suicide. You don't say somebody committed pancreatic cancer, somebody committed heart attack. That's just a subtle, lingering, residual way of thinking about depression and suicide. Number one cause for mm-hmm. suicide is untreated depression.
Right. It's like making it, it's like assigning criminality to an act.
It is. So right. Anyone listening, so if they're thinking, okay, so to say to commit suicide is participating with the stigma that this must be a crime or a sin. So you may be thinking, if you're listening, so how? What do I say? That's the only way I've heard suicide referenced to commit suicide. Well, then you say, died by pancreatic cancer, died by suicide. You may say, my lady friend down the street lost her battle to the disease of lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that despair, out of that brain that was not healthy and not able to think straight, took their own life. And I forgot what the question was because I probably went so far. But it's well taken to know that our community and this event, the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, Health and Healing, is a part of countering the stigma, raising awareness. The number one cause for suicide is untreated depression. Depression is a treatable disease. So when people understand that relationship between depression
right.
and suicide, they're going to get help.
Right. And that includes if they've had a suicide in their lives.
And if they've had a suicide in their lives. Right. And so that's what spirits, this new outreach, mm-hmm. which again is going to be so sensitive to the needs of Hampton Roads.
Right.
And how we can promote good mental health, raise awareness. Depression is a treatable disease. Suicide is, I know this to be true, a preventable tragedy.
So just to come back to the support group, if people want to find a group, people who've had a loss of suicide, how do they reach out to your group?
They just call, and it's my number. Yeah. It's my real number, 483-5111. There's no fee.
Right.
I always ask for people to call informally to someone to register.
Right.
But so they can talk with me, and it's a big step. You know, this is a group. I can't tell you how many times I hear, and I understand, I'm sure you do, John, people will say, this is not a group I want to be a member of.
Right.
Yet I'm so glad this group is here. So call, and I'll talk with you, and together we'll see if this is a group that makes sense for you.
Great. So let's take a break, and what I want to do is come back and talk again a little bit about stigma and some of the things that, if that's okay. But I'm talking with Chris Gilchrist about the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, Help, and Healing. She is the founder and facilitator of the Hampton Roads Survivors of Suicide Support Group. You can find out information about that support group by calling 757-483-5111, and we will be right back in just a second.
Severely depressed, two things. You can't think straight. You have a distorted view. You're not reality-based. You're distorted with these views that it'll never get better. Not true. There's nothing you can do. You're helpless. Not true. The world's better off without you. Not true. But you really think that because mm-hmm. you're depressed and your brain's not working right. And compound that with, I'll put two other factors, the stigma about depression and suicide and getting help,
yeah.
so you're less likely to do that. But let's toss in, it is so emotionally painful. You just, it's not that you want to end your life, you just want the pain to stop.
Yeah.
Now, when people hear that, so this woman, the first time, I'm just trying to have her feel safe with me
right.
and get some hope.
You're talking about somebody coming here to...
The person who was before you. Well, right. no, the person who was before you was somebody else. But the person before that, I saw one meeting in patients before you.
Well, so, not me, but...
Yeah. No, I'm not counting you as a patient.
No, it's good. My insurance doesn't cover anything.
That's too bad. No, gosh.
Once a year, my insurance company mails me a Band-Aid and a good luck card.
This is why I don't do HMOs.
Yeah.
I don't do HMOs.
Well, I'm a journalist.
Right? So. Stay healthy, you journalist. Don't you fall. So, but when you understand this, and I'll give this talk to military, to help them understand, because with the military, there's no way to reconcile a military persona
mm-hmm.
and somebody who can't be a good leader.
Yeah.
But when you understand the disease from an organ
mm-hmm.
and an unhealthy organ, no matter what the organ is, can't do its job. And with the brain, it's an unhealthy brain, it can't think straight.
I mean, there are all kinds of things to worry about. I mean, you don't want to seem weak in front of your group, but, I mean, you don't want to lose your clearance, right? You don't want to lose
right.
a position.
But if you think of this as a medical condition, that's the best way. So when you talk about stigma, I will say the best way to counter the stigma is to grasp an understanding,
mm-hmm.
a firm belief of depression as a medical condition.
Yeah.
Because that's the best way to counter the stigma.
So, I mean, 3 decades ago, was that where we were?
So 3 decades ago, okay, a group then, average was maybe 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And probably with that small number, you know, the number would grow somewhat slowly, but then faster.
Yeah.
One male for every 10 females.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes I'll count, the last session, there were almost as many males as females.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Let's go back and talk about when, we're rolling here, so let's talk about when the group started. You didn't think maybe you were the right person.
Yeah, I almost didn't do.
Why not?
Because I thought you had to have experienced that to best empathize and best be effective and earn their trust and empathize. Are we on right now?
We're on. We're gone.
Oh, I didn't know. I'm kicking you. I'm kicking him in the upper thigh. I don't want to injure you.
No, that's okay. Okay. Yeah, that hurt a great deal.
Let me try again.
Yeah. Sorry. You know, this is a conversation where, you know.
Okay, I didn't know.
It doesn't have to be a big, sorry.
But that's right.
So you didn't think you were the right person?
Right.
Why not?
Well, I didn't think I was the right person because I was concerned that not having lost a loved one to suicide, I would not be able to provide the best support.
Mm-hmm.
I may not be empathetic enough. I may miss some of the important components of grieving for someone who's lost a loved one to suicide. So I might not professionally be equipped, and I might not personally be best able to support them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I struggle with that, and the sequence of things, which also my faith is important, so I think my faith must have been in there someplace. But the timing of things was I was asked by a hospital to be the facilitator of this group. I'm not sure why they asked me, but I was asked by a hospital to be the facilitator. And I was thinking about it because, again, I was struck by I have lost a loved one to suicide, and for the reasons I explained, I might not have the professional understanding or skills. I might have the personal empathy because I hadn't lost a loved one. So I was thinking about it. Well, it was just within weeks, because I was still saying I need more time to consider this. When I was assigned, I was in a private practice, and it was not my practice, and I was assigned a bereavement of a woman. And she was, and I have a lot of some pastoral background with bereavement, but a woman who had lost her husband to suicide,
mm-hmm.
and she's left as a single parent of children. And so I'm thinking, oh my gosh, but I've been assigned it.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna see this woman, and I remember, I don't know who it was, but I talked to someone or did some homework so that maybe I'd be better equipped or prepared to support and help direct her in this bereavement. So I met with her, and right away, John, I see so many reasons why losing a loved one to suicide, there are many reasons, is more prolonged, more complicated bereavement. And so in meeting with her, and I seemed to, I hadn't given my answer yet about the group, but I've sensed that even though I had not experienced this, I think I could possibly provide adequate support, because I thought, well, I've had patients who were incest survivors, and I haven't experienced that.
Yeah.
I have recovering alcoholics I'm assisting, and I haven't experienced addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So for one thing, I felt great relief that I don't have to experience everything as a therapist,
right,
to maybe offer clinical interventions as well as personal support. So with that, and with this woman and assisting her, I thought maybe I would be able to offer something that could contribute toward healthy bereavement.
It started, though, in a different time for the way that we look at mental illness and suicide, though. Is that fair?
I'd say it's fair, because the stigma was even greater. In Hampton Roads, I know that we're making some progress in understanding the relationship between depression and suicide. Remember, number one cause for suicide is untreated depression.
Right.
But at the beginning, the profile even of who would come to the SOS group or even how people found out about it has really changed.
I know I first heard about you several years ago, but Joanne Kimberlin from The Pilot wrote a really important series of stories about suicide in the region.
Oh, she, what a professional and what an ethical and sensitive person. She ended up we were just having a brief meeting, but she was taken by this topic and said, let's meet again. We ended up meeting 7 or 8 times with the result of a 3-day series, front page each day. The last day was Sunday, and 3 pages a day.
And it was just, I thought, really important and very compassionate, but also direct and
informative.
Yeah. So I'll have to... I think The Pilot still has those online because I just read those a couple years
ago.
Really?
Yeah,
because the first time we were going to talk when I was doing something for The Pilot at the time, I read those articles. And I'll have to put them up at the website when we post the podcast. It's great work. Again, Joanne Kimberlin, if you hear this and want to seek them out yourself, she's at the Virginian Pilot. Good people, good reporter.
Listen, I don't know how intuitive you think you are.
Yeah.
I left a message for Joanne yesterday because, we met quite a few times, and I did leave her a message yesterday or the day before.
So you're seeing other newspapers is what you're saying?
I want her to know what happened 10 years later from when we first met.
Chris, I have really low self-esteem. That hurts me. Yeah. Okay. Well, I will try to overcome that later.
So
what have you, I guess what
great
I'm getting
minds
at.
Minds like to great talk minds. With
okay,
each
yeah,
other.
Okay, Joanne Kimberlin's the best. Yay, Joanne. We're going to start talking about The Pilot now. What have you, I want to talk about what you've seen change in the 30 years with the support group and just in general, but then also specifically what do we need to do to kind of continue to remove that stigma? If you could talk about those two things, I'd appreciate it.
Well, I think the first part maybe is helpful to look at the differences and what contributes toward that and what we can maybe build on from there. So when I would start the group, a couple of things. One is it was hard, computer and communications changed too in 30 years, but people were very reluctant to talk about their own losing a loved one to suicide. And they were not well supported. I remember the woman who lost her son to suicide, and she said to me, actually it was in a session, but she said to me, Chris, I thought I could suffer no greater pain than losing my son, but the whispers cut even deeper. Because people didn't know how to talk about depression and suicide, which is one of the reasons, why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
So people...
And people often, I guess if I could just say that, you want to talk about it.
It's
sometimes you want to talk about it. And it...
It being depression and or suicide.
Yeah, and I remember, I wrote a story many, many years ago for a magazine, and it was about people who lost their spouses at a young age, and I just remember, people, loved ones of one young man, a man that I talked to who lost his wife, and he was just talking about, I just want to talk about her, and people don't know how to talk about her.
Oh, just in general with bereavement.
Yeah.
That's true. Death is taboo. Mm-hmm. And that's changing too.
Yeah.
I think that's changing some too. So, people's reluctance to talk, people's reluctance to be associated and not knowing how to handle because, that it's viewed as a sin, a crime, that to commit suicide, ways of understanding. The males, for every 10 females who might attend the SOS group back, and this was the 80s when I started this, for every 10, there might be one male.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last, we meet once a month, the third Wednesday of the month, the last time or two, I remember counting, and there were almost as many men. Once in a while, there'll even be more men present than females. But I would say for every three females, there's a male, and sometimes it's even more. So that represents we're countering our understanding of emotional pain and talking and being brave and strong. You can still be a brave and strong male and have emotions and share tears. There's not a group when we meet. In fact, we have two proverbial tissue boxes in the center of a circle. We meet in a circle, and there are boxes there. And usually the person who goes to the center to pick up a box is doing that to hand it out to someone else in a group.
Yeah.
And it's a very sensitive, accepting group. I've never had in all of these years a breach. You know, we talk about confidentiality every time, and I've never, isn't that amazing, John?
Yeah.
In 29 years, never heard of a violation from somebody who's attended talking about someone else. I'm so pleased that that's the group culture. So the group grows, the people have access to learning about it more. This group obviously is the longest running group in Virginia, in the whole state of Virginia. I think there are only, although there are small groups that might pop up, but in the state of Virginia, I think there are only 7 survivors of suicide, SOS groups recognized by the American Association of Suicidology, or I'm a member of them.
Yeah.
So it's more accessible. People feel less stigmatized in coming. Men also feel more welcome in. I'll hear people in the group change their language.
Mm-hmm.
When we go around for introductions, a new person will say, "And my husband died by suicide."
Yeah.
Someone else may say, "My son was depressed and shot himself or took his life."
Right.
Isn't that something?
It is. So, I mean, what else do we have to do? I mean, what more is there to do as far as awareness? Or, I mean, is there anything specific that people who may not
be come to this event, come to the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, because there will be 15 to 20 clinically licensed counselors there for the 4 hours, there to support, to answer questions, to give you information, to even assist you with the depression inventory.
Mm-hmm.
The program
what's a depression inventory?
Well, it's a paper depression inventory, which will show you symptoms of depression, and you can check off, and it'll let you know if you check so many. It has 2 different parts, and they'll help you look at it. You know, there, and give it's a soft inventory,
right.
But on it it'll say too. You know, we have counselors here to assist you with understanding this. You know, I've had people, there will be people who come up and say, "Hey, can I have 20? Our family, our whole family's getting together. There are 20 of us. And I think it would be good for our family to understand more about the depression."
That's great.
And so the depression inventory lists symptoms of depression. It gives the crisis line. It lets you know if you check a few here, this many there, you may be struggling with depression. Depression is treatable. Consult your physician.
Right.
Isn't that useful?
It is useful. Yeah. You used a word before, emotions. What are they?
Oh!
No, I'm
cannot
sorry.
Be seen.
I will not ask you every term.
I see this chart in the faces that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it is great.
Yeah,
you know what?
I can see this. Chris actually has a chart with faces and emotions on it, but that's okay.
No, but I want to tell you, below each face, each expression is a word, angry, hopeful, scared. I can show that poster to a kid who can't read or write.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they can point to a face and say, "That's how I feel."
Oh,
they may not have the vocabulary to say, "I feel..." I'm trying to think one that's shy.
Right.
They may not know what shyness is, but they'll put it into their own kids' words, and it's going to say shy.
Hmm. Wow.
It's amazing. Yeah.
That's funny. See, I'm in my 40s, so you have to show me a chart with like food items and emotions. Like cheeseburgers.
Macaroni and cheese. Yeah.
Right. That's depressed. That's a comfort food. Comfort food is depression. Oh, no. That's funny. So let me just ask you, is there anything I should have asked you that we should have talked about, but I was too dumb to think of it?
Oh, you are not too dumb. Your brain is healthy.
Thank you.
And
can you write that down and sign it, and I will show it to my wife when I get home.
I will. Thanks. But I'm saying that, too, as a segue. Mm-hmm. The one part would be, and I don't know if you were taping this when I said this,
yeah.
is I really hope people understand the disease of depression more. And the best way, in my view, to understand, and again, the number one cause for suicide is depression. Depression is a disease. It's a medical condition, which means, and this is the best way to counter the stigma so people get help and we reduce suicides, is to understand that with depression, there's an organ called the brain, and the brain is not healthy. Any organ has to be healthy to do its job, whether it's the pancreas, whether it's the heart, whether it's your lungs. Those organs have to be healthy for you to have good circulation,
right.
for you to have healthy sugar levels. When the brain is not healthy, severe depression is going to involve biochemistry,
right.
neurotransmitters. It's not healthy. And when the brain is not healthy, it cannot do its job. It cannot effectively problem solve. You do not think straight. So when someone says how selfish of them to take their life, they were not fully understanding that that loved one was not trying to hurt them. Their loved one could not think straight, could not problem solve to fix what may have been going on, cannot think straight because they have a distorted view of reality that leaves them thinking in non-reality-based ways. So they're thinking in this unhealthy brain that what they're feeling, what the situation is, they cannot change it.
Mm-hmm.
That's wrong. That's not accurate. Their brain has non-reality perceptions, so they're left thinking there's nothing they can do
mm-hmm.
to make things better. That's not true.
Yeah.
They're left thinking that the world is better off without them. That's not true. That's not reality-based. They're thinking they're hopeless. There's helplessness. They're defeated, self-defeated, helpless, hopeless ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So they cannot think their way out of it because their brain cannot function. Then the other part of it, John, is the emotional pain hurts a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had mentioned to you, I had a double amputee who mm-hmm. stepped on a mine coming to me for depression. And he said to me, you know, the pain I suffered from the injury, from the multiple surgeries, that physical pain was not as great as the emotional pain. Severe depression hurts so bad that you think you just want to do anything that will stop the pain. And because you can't think straight to find solutions, it's not so much you want to end your life, it's you want to end the pain. That's because your organ, the brain, is not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that unhealthy brain can be healthy again with treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want people to know. Depression is medical, it is treatable. So your thinking, your perception, your decision making
mm-hmm.
can be healthy and reality based again.
That's great. Thank you, Chris. Well, thank you so much.
Does that help you understand?
Absolutely. And I think hopefully that'll help our listeners understand too. So let me just mention the Hampton Roads Morning of Hope, Help and Healing, again, is scheduled for September 9th, 2017 at Mount Trashmore Park in Virginia Beach. You can reach out to Chris to find out more about participating or sponsoring at 757-483-5111. I'll give out the other number one more time. If you're in crisis, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That number is 1-800-273-8255 or 1-800-273-TALK. I'm John Doucette from the Princess Anne Independent News. You can follow the newspaper on Facebook, on Twitter via @PungoPublishing, or go to our website, which is www.princessanneindy.com. And, by the way, has an E on the end of it. And you can find stories at the site, or if you're local, a list of places to find the print edition. Chris Gilchrist, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You are welcome. Thank you for this opportunity. You don't have to worry about your expression or how you sit or anything.
Oh, no, I can't. And I'm on the floor here, too. And yes. I have 40-something bones. So it's going to...
40-something bones?
Bones. So when I stand up, it's going to sound like somebody squeezing a bag of potato
chips. Oh, you have
chips.
Had some injury.
No, no, just bad decisions.
Oh.
All right.
War wounds.
War wounds. Yeah, eating 40 years of eating bread.